Hello. You're about to listen to one of our audio-only webcasts, which was taken from one of our popular video webcasts. We'd love to get your feedback on how valuable and effective this format is for you. After you listen, please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio/survey to complete a quick evaluation. That's webcastaudio.com/survey. Thanks for the feedback and enjoy this podcast.
So again, I'd like to welcome you to today's TechNet webcast, Enabling Trusted Communications and Health Policy Enforcement with Network Access Protection. It's my pleasure to introduce today's presenter. We have Gene Ferrioli here, and Gene is a program manager with the Windows Server Customer Advisory Team. So Gene, take it away.
Great. Thanks, Janet. Hi, everyone. I'm Gene Ferrioli, program manager in the Customer Connection Team. Today what we're going to talk about is actually a kind of a part two session of what we talked about back in June for network access protection. In part one, if you had a chance to view that webcast, we actually went through the components of NAP. We went through a quick demo of NAP, and then we went through what you can do today to prepare for NAP. That consisted of what we call creating health zones, creating plans for your networking infrastructure to create enforcements or enforcement strategies. So things like that. So if you haven't actually viewed that, I highly encourage you to take a look at that. It gives you a great overview on what you need to do today to plan for NAP when we release it next year. So there are things you can start doing today to plan for NAP. What we're going to talk about today, though, is a little bit more of a continuation of what we talked about during that first presentation. What we're going to do is go over the actual, let me get on the slide here. Here we go. We're going to do a quick overview of the network access protection architecture, not too much in detail, but we'll just give a quick overview to bring everybody up to speed. Then we'll go into a NAP demo, and the scenarios that we're going to address during the demo are going to be what we call the self-remediation scenario, where we have the user actually take action to fix the host when it's deemed unhealthy, quote-unquote. And then the second scenario what we have is going to be an example of auto-remediation, where we have the actual NAP agent using the Trend system health agent remediate the user's machine without any user intervention whatsoever. And that's really where you want to be with network access protection, is having the machine take care of itself. There will be times that the user will need to do remediation, and we'll provide guidance to the user on how to do that. But ultimately, we're going to want to look at the auto-remediation as being hopefully 99% of scenarios that we can address today. Once we go through the demo, we're actually going to do a little bit more breakdown, if you will, of the NAP components. We'll go over the NAP components, talking about the quarantine enforcement clients. We'll show how we're using the DHCP enforcement client in our demo, along with the IPsec enforcement client. We'll show the configuration of the NAP agent itself, the service, and so forth. Then we'll move over to the network access device. In our demo case, it's going to be the DHCP server. And in IPsec, it's going to be called something new, the Health Registration Authority, and we'll do a little bit of a drill down on exactly how that's configured. And then moving on over, we'll move and take a look at the Network Policy Server, or the NPS, to see exactly how our health policies are configured to evaluate the health of our clients when they come onto the network. And then we'll do a quick slide on preparing for NAP, kind of an overview of what I talked about back in June. And then finally at the end, we're going to go over the Cisco Microsoft Technology Roadmap, the NAC, Network Emission Control, and NAP, Network Access Protection Integration Strategy. If those of you that recall back in October of 2004, we actually came out with a press release with Cisco saying, hey, we're going to collaborate, but we're not going to tell you exactly how just quite yet. Well, that answer is actually out there now, and 2 weeks ago at the Security Standard Conference in Boston, Cisco and Microsoft jointly announced the collaboration technology roadmap strategy of how the two products will interoperate. And that's really a big win for our customers and for Microsoft and Cisco, because it says that if you want to deploy network emission control today and then deploy NAP on top of that later on next year, you can do that without rip and replacing. Same holds true if you want to deploy NAP and then later NAC, you can do the same. So we'll go over exactly what that means and what that looks like. So kind of a review here of, you know, network access protection, what I call the four pillars. And this is really with any endpoint health enforcement solution that's out there. Policy validation, you want to be able to determine any host. Now, we're talking about strictly the host here. We're not talking about users. We're talking about endpoints that are plugging into the network. We want to evaluate their state of health. That being, you know, what is their firewall? Is it on or off? Are they running the latest patch? Do they have antivirus on, and is it up to date? So these are things you really want to take and evaluate on these endpoints before allowing them full access onto the network. Now, once we're able to evaluate their posture or health posture, we want to be able to restrict if they're out of compliance. So that comes under network restriction. So based on my health or the computer's health, we want to be able to have the ability to quarantine or restrict that that host into a quarantine network where perhaps we're just giving access to the Internet only, or perhaps we're allowing the host a chance to remediate. And that comes into the third bullet point, remediation. We don't want to just restrict, because that can generally be bad when we have our managed machines come in, say laptops or, you know, or maybe desktops that are plugging in, and restricting them because they perhaps don't have the latest patch. We want to give the ability to remediate, and that's where we come into remediation, where we place these remediation servers on the quarantine network. So we allow the devices to go ahead and get updated and then go through the state of health check again once they're updated. And finally, we have the fourth pillar, what I call ongoing compliance. Now, once I get healthy, I want to stay healthy, right? So you get the compliance, you want to stay compliant. So that's really the strong point of NAP, is that any time my health state or health posture changes on my client, the NAP agent will go through a reevaluation of the statement of health. It will then send a new statement of health across the wire to the network access device to the policy server, and it will say, the health state has changed. Is this okay? Yes or no? And if no, what will happen is that the client or host will be restricted once again and then given a chance to remediate. So that's incredibly important, that we just don't want to evaluate health at plug-in time. We want to maintain the compliance. Okay, here we go. Next slide. So let's quickly go through the network access protection components, health components as we start. Down. There we go. So we're looking at the bottom of the computer here, and what we're seeing is the system health agents. Now, these system health agents can be third party. They could be Microsoft. It really doesn't matter. The point I'm trying to make is that as we talk here, the one thing I want everyone to come away with is that Network Access Protection, or NAP, is a platform. It's a platform where our partners like Symantec, like Trend, Alteris, Tivoli can plug into. Because we're taking a different approach this time. Rather than saying this is another Microsoft solution that only encompasses Microsoft components, we're actually saying, let's give our customers a platform where we can build a partner ecosystem where the customers can maintain existing investments, such as an antivirus, and leverage them onto NAP. So the system health agents may be your firewall, whether it be a Microsoft firewall or a third party. It will plug into the system as a system health agent and declare its health state. The system health validators, as we look over to the right-hand side, is actually on our network policy server. That is going to be a Longhorn server. And we want to be clear, too, about the Longhorn server for network policy, or the NPS. The Longhorn server that is dropped into your enterprise does not mean that you have to go to a Longhorn forest or domain. This is simply a member computer or member server of your Active Directory, whether it be 2000, 2003, hopefully 2003, that you're joining as a member. You simply drop it in and configure policy. Those of you that have played around with 2003 and are familiar with Internet Authentication Service, or IAS, essentially the policy server is IAS on steroids. So we're taking the Radius attributes and bringing that into as being a policy server for NAP. System health servers. Now, these system health servers feed into the policy server. Essentially what these system health servers are the SMS site servers. They could be your antivirus, Symantec, Trend servers, which are basically dictating what is considered to be healthy. So if you have an SHV for antivirus, you have Symantec, you'll have a system health server that's running that a business unit's running today and can continue running once NAP is released, that feeds into the policy server. It's not telling the policy server you must be at antivirus X. What it's doing is essentially feeding it an object ID or OID of what is considered healthy. Remediation servers, again, we mentioned a little bit about remediation servers. When the host is quarantined, we're given the ability for updates to be provided to the client. Remediation servers may be SMS. Now, if you don't have SMS, that's fine, and we're going to see a partner slide of other other third-party vendors we're working with, like Tivoli, Altaris. Those are third parties that if you're working with today and using, you can continue working and using them because they will be integrated into the NAT platform. Essentially, these servers will be sitting in the quarantine network, which will allow the host to talk to update either patches, antivirus, and software, et cetera. Now, enforcement components. Quarantine enforcement components. These are running on the client again. Now, to be clear on what clients are supported for NAT today, we're talking about Vista. We're also backporting this to XP. You will see a demo of both. There are plans to work with third-party vendors, like to develop a Linux NAT client, a Mac NAT client. Those are on the table as a plan to go forward. We want this to be a holistic solution. We want our customers to take this health solution and encompass all of our devices, not just Windows. So these quarantine enforcement clients that are running on here essentially would be, for example, IPsec. They could be VPN, DHCP, or 802.1x. And those are the four enforcements that we're talking about: DHCP, IPsec, 802.1x, and VPN. Those are natively supported by NAT today. So those quarantine enforcement clients are running on the client itself. You can run one QEC or you can run multiple. And that's very important as we talk about what do I use for enforcement as we go on. And we'll discuss that a little bit towards the end. Let's see here. Come on. All right. So my slide isn't moving here. There we go. Okay, now, hopefully, as we go forward here, a long period of silence was detected on the telephone.
And you can just ignore that.
Okay. It's always good to get false positives. So, what we're looking at here in the middle is network access device. Now, these are the devices that the client will send a statement of health to. Now, the network access device, on what you want to use, depends on the enforcement option you choose. If you choose to do 802.1x, then the network access device will be a switch. If you do wireless 802.1x, it would be an access point talking back to a back-end switch. If we're talking about IPsec enforcement, then our network access device would be a health registration authority. DHCP, obviously, would be a DHCP server, and then VPN would be a VPN server. These are the devices that control access to the network. All right, quarantine agent. Now, we don't have any red highlight there, but on the left-hand side of your client computer is what we're looking at. The quarantine agent, again, is part of the NAP agent itself. That quarantine agent is essentially a health broker. It takes what the SHAs, the system health agents above it, report to it. So if you have firewall, you have antivirus, and you have patches, those system health agents will report its status to the quarantine agent. The quarantine agent, in turn, will take those statuses and form what we call a statement of health. And the statement of health will be passed from the quarantine agent down to the QEC, which will forward to the network access device, which forwards it to the policy server for evaluation. So the quarantine agent will live as local service on Vista and XP. Going to our next slide here. Demo. There we go. Quarantine server on our right-hand side is part of our network policy server. So essentially, the quarantine server restricts the computer based on what the SHVs tell it. Are you healthy or not? If you are healthy, you're given the green light. Then in IPsec case, that would be a health certificate. In 802.1x, you essentially would be VLAN into the unrestricted access network. All right. So I mentioned a little bit about partners. Where is my partner? So this is an old slide. I have not had a chance to add Cisco there, but Cisco should be on there. This is actually back from November. So we have over 75 partners. If you want to see a full list of partners, I encourage you to go to Microsoft.com/NAP, or N-A-P. You can see all the partners that are out there that will be plugging into the environment. If your partner or vendor is not on here, I strongly recommend calling them and asking them what their NAP strategy is. How are they going to integrate? As an example, I was working with Nortel, great partner of ours, and they want to integrate into the NAT platform. Well, the idea is to continue using the Nortel devices as your network access devices, but move the policy validation and analysis to our policy server. So they will plug into the NAT platform, continue to be the network access device, but we'll look to our policy server as the policy holder, so we can have a centralized management of the policy. We don't want to have a bunch of different areas that we're doing policy management where we can have conflicts and so forth. We want a centrally located, enterprise-ready solution. All right. So we'll go through a walkthrough here of an IPsec NAT walkthrough. This is what the demo is actually going to be for the IPsec. And from the beginning, what we're going to do here is the client will plug into the network. Client plugs into the network. All right. There we go. So essentially, in the demo, what you're going to see is that the client is going to try and get to their Exchange server. They're going to be unhealthy, they're going to be in a restricted state, and they're going to try and connect to Exchange, but cannot connect because we're using IPsec-based enforcement. IPsec-based enforcement are using health certificates. We're doing something called ESP null, or encapsulating security payload null, no encryption. Those of you that are familiar with server and domain isolation, that is using IPsec to lock down your environment. That can be done today. We're not talking about using VPNs. We're not talking about IPsec tunnels. We're talking about endpoint-to-endpoint authentication using ESP null, meaning two hosts must authenticate prior to any communication occurring. So when the host tries to get to the policy server or the Exchange server, access is denied because I don't have a health certificate. The host then goes to the health registration authority. May I have access to the network? Here is my statement of health. Okay, so from there, what happens, the HRA, or Health Registration Authority, sends it to the policy server in the protected zone. And if you notice here, we have quarantine, boundary, and protected. Quarantine can talk to boundary. Quarantine cannot talk to protected. Boundary can talk to quarantine. Boundary can talk to protected. Because you need to have infrastructure services available to clients that are in restricted states in order for them to get healthy. So the HRA will pass that to the policy server. Is this client okay, yes or no? Policy server looks at the statement of health and says, nope, it needs fix-ups. Here are the fix-ups it needs. Go to this server. The HRA passes this response or statement of health response to the client. You don't get a health certificate. You need to go here to get fixed up. Go to the remediation server. The client dynamically knows that it needs to go to the remediation server based on the policy you've configured on the NPS. I then download the updates, whether it be, again, SMS, Tiddly, Alteris. Perhaps there's a reboot that's needed. Client then reboots, comes back up. And then goes through the same process again. Goes back to the health registration authority and says, may I have a health certificate? Here is my statement of health. HRA then passes it back to the policy server. Yes, issue certificate. Here is your health certificate. Go ahead. You can now communicate with the Exchange server. When I try and connect to Exchange, I'm now granted access because I have that health credential. So then he gets in. So let's get right into the demo here. So the first example we're going to go through is going to be, again, the XP client, because we follow through on our commitment saying that we will support XP for NAT. It'll be using IPsec enforcement, and it'll be using DHCP enforcement. We'll do a drill down exactly how that looks. Second example will be Vista client. We'll be using an example of auto-remediation using the Trend third-party SHA, or System Health Agent, because I want to show how the partners plug in here. And I think it's very important to show that it's not just Microsoft going through. So everyone should be seeing just the demo still, Network Access Protection. I haven't moved it yet. So there we go. Now you should see, hopefully, everyone sees the demo setup. So here's my setup in my virtual environment. We have the two clients in our quarantine zone, which we'll start off in. We'll have our boundary zone, which will have the health registration, DHCP, and the SMS server, and then the protected zone. So it kind of gives you a logical overview of what it looks like and what we're going to do. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch over to my demo machine here. And we'll give that a few seconds to come on up. All right. And what everyone should be seeing now is a control delete screen for my Longhorn server. I'm actually running the release candidate. Hopefully everyone's tested it. What I want to do first is, before we start the demo, is actually I want to show you the health policy, what we're talking about. What do I consider healthy for my hosts to get onto my network? What policy should they adhere to? So I'm actually on the network policy server, NPS, as you see there. And we're going to do a deep dive on this after the demo, but first I want to show you what we call the System Health Validator. Very cool here, and I don't have the SMS one plugged in this one because that was a different demo, but the takeaway here is that you see the Trend Micro Office Scan System Health Validator. Now, let me be clear, I'm not endorsing Trend as being better than anyone else. I simply had their NAP-aware product available at the time. We're working with Symantec and other third parties that we have beta code available. I just didn't have time to get that downloaded into this demo, so I want to be clear. So we have Trend plugged in here as an SHV or System Health Agent, and we also have the Windows Security Health Validator, which comes by default in the network policy server. So if I click on this, I can actually look, and I notice that now I see up top Windows Vista, and I see Windows XP SP2 as being the two choices here. So Vista, I decided that firewall needs to be on, auto-updating needs to be on, and I'm not using virus protection or Microsoft virus protection because I configured that to use Trend. My XP client, however, I have configured to have virus protection on, meaning the Microsoft virus protection. So in this case here, it's a little bit of a different policy. Anyway, so in the first example will be XP. I need the firewall on, virus protection on and up-to-date, and auto-updating must be enabled. So we click OK. That's good. So I'm going to go to the XP client. Here we are. All right. Say a little prayer to the demo gods, and here we go. So I'm going to log on as a Corp user. It's Monday morning. I'm coming in. I'm plugging in. My machine or laptop has been home, and my kids have been playing on it all weekend, and they like to do things like shut off my antivirus and things like that because they want to play games or they think they're funny. So I come on, I plug in, and you'll notice that the first thing that's noticed is Security Center, which is essentially showing all my health agents, firewall, auto updates, virus protection. Firewall is on, auto updates is on, or are on. Virus protection is off. And you remember the policy we configured to say virus protection needs to be on and up to date. And you'll notice that I have a little bubble down here showing the computer does not meet corporate network requirements. Network access is limited. I can click on it and give the user some information. Now remember, this is a self-remediation example where we have the user fix the machine up. SHA not present, that's actually a UI issue with the Trend SHA SHV because I haven't installed it on this machine, but it appears on there. That will be fixed at RTM, no worries there. But the health agent here is saying that computer is not compliant with corporate network requirements. I can click try again, or I can actually click on more information. The more information button can direct me to a website based on the policy I've configured in the boundary zone. It can tell me and give the user prescriptive guidance on what they need to do to get healthy. It says, if your system is running antivirus 1.1, please go here and update. Well, as a user, I really don't care about your health policies. And what we can see here as an example, if I go to a command prompt and do ipconfig, what you should see is an IP address, and what's interesting is my subnet mask essentially has been plumbed to itself. So it's in the restricted zone right now, and if I want to do a route print, you can actually show what I'm allowed to talk to. In this case, I'm using classless static routes here. I'm essentially saying that you can go to 11.0.0.6 as the only server you're allowed to communicate with. Now, if you think about it, DHCP is really a poor man's VLAN solution. I've been working with a customer using DHCP enforcement, and it's actually been quite effective. The con of using DHCP is that if somebody knows your IP scheme, they could statically map an IP address into the client and bypass health check. But the takeaway here is remember what NAP is and NAP is not. NAP is checking the host of your machines that plug into the network. It is not a security solution to keep the bad guy off the network. Let me be clear about that, okay? So NAP is to enforce health policy to your machines. If some bad guy is taking and reconfiguring the machine and doing something else, they have physical access to the machine. There's not much they can't do. So I want to be clear. NAP is an endpoint health enforcement solution. So if we want to minimize this, and I'm going to minimize this, and as a salesperson, I don't care about health. I just want to get mail in the morning. I want to see who sent me mail because I don't work on the weekends. No offense to those salespeople out there. But what we want to do is try and get to Exchange. Now, I'm in quarantine, so I don't have a health cert, nor do I have a route or an IP address that allows me onto unrestricted access. So this is a great example of what we're showing here for DHCP enforcement and IPsec enforcement. And what I'm bringing up now are my certificates for the local store of this computer. As you can see, there's nothing here. So DHCP, you saw how the restricted access was provisioned. IPsec, you can see that I don't have a health certificate, so therefore I can't talk to Exchange. Now, I could have used one or the other, but I chose to use both to show that you can use multiple enforcements. Now, as a user, I finally get it. I said, okay, I need to get healthy, so let's get healthy. So I'm going to simulate going out and getting remediated. And what I want you to watch is the Security Center. It's going to go to healthy. As soon as I click on it, there we go. And I'm going to minimize that. And watch the NAT client going through a statement of health check. So the client is now going through and saying, ah, one of my system health agents has changed. I need to reevaluate my health to see if it's okay. This time, NAT or the network policy server said, yes, you're good to go. And here's you meet computer corporate network requirements. So I click send receive again. Connected. So I'm allowed. Oh, and there's all my mail. Fantastic. So as you've seen, this is a pretty powerful demo. I really try and get these demos geared to more of a business scenario rather than the techie bits and bytes, you know, a little bit of both, if you will. So you've seen a very powerful example. What I see every day at customers is people plugging in after the weekend where something has changed, which goes against health policy. We want to prevent the host from connecting until they get healthy, and we've effectively shown that here. So that was an example of self-remediation. Now, what we want to do, and if I do this, you know, a little start and go back to the doc prompt again, a little bit of the bits and bytes again, we can show that now I have a IP address and I have a gateway. And if I do route print, you can now see that I'm allowed to go everywhere. So I'm full access, everything is good, I can do whatever I'd like, and I can see that now if I do a refresh, you see here I have a health certificate. This is a regular X509 V3 certificate that's very short-lived, September 19th from 418 to 528. The question, why is it short-lived, is this. The answer is this. It's because we want short-lived certificates so we can go through the health reevaluation at a certain amount of time. That certain amount of time is going to be when the certificate comes up for renewal. So after 80% of the certificate lifetime has expired, a random offset is set on each certificate issued to renew between that 81% and the 100% of the lifetime of the certificate. So what will happen is the client will go through another statement of health check and then say, am I healthy? Yes, you are. Here's a new certificate. We don't use any of the key material from the old cert. We delete it from the store, and you're issued a new private key, which is generated on the local machine, and a new certificate from the health CA. So let's go ahead and close that. We're good to go. Now let's go over to our Vista client. I love this stuff. All right. Another short prayer to the demo gods. Now, we're running beta code OS, and we're running alpha, maybe beta code, system health agents. Not an excuse, merely just to say I like to take risks. So let's go ahead and log on. And before we do that, let me do some setting up here. I want to revert that machine's health. I want to revert the machine. What I need to do is actually revert the health signature, which is here. If I do an F5, I bet it's been updated. Yeah, there it is. That's the new one. So what I'm going to do is take that signature and revert it to an older one and see what happens. So right now, the client's healthy. Let me actually log off. And then what I'm going to do is revert it back, and we're going to see what happens. So the client was healthy. That's fine. I go home at night. I log off. And what I'm going to do now is actually delete that signature file. Okay. Make sure it's gone. All right. Done. Good. So I'm going to try and flip back. Sorry for the flipping of screens here, but I just want to make sure that we're showing an effective demo. Come on, baby. Okay, good. Now let's log back on. So I've been off network for a while. I haven't updated my machine. The system administrators have updated the virus signatures to say you must be at this policy or this virus signature, so let's see what happens when I log on. Client comes up. Da-da-da-da. Take a little bit more time here. So essentially what's happening now is now we got to wait for the health agent, which is the trend health agent, to pop up on my little window down the right-hand corner. Again, this is running virtual server here, so it's a little bit slower. There's my friend. So now what's happening is that the NAP agent is talking to the trend health agent to say, okay, are you up to date? No, I'm not up to date. You are now quarantined. So at the same time, you can see, now this is the cool part. So I'm going to click on this, and I'm going to show you what's going on. The Trend Micro Office Scan is actually updating in front of your eyes. The user isn't doing anything here. It actually is going through and updating. Now, if I try and click on mail at the same time again, using the IPsec enforcement, where's my Windows Mail? I'm not using Outlook this time because I really like to take risks. I'm going to use Windows Mail, a.k.a. Outlook Express, and bring that up. So what's cool here is that we're showing auto remediation going on with working code. This works today. I've been working with Trend with them to show how, you know, customers who want this to work. Hopefully this is, everyone agrees that this is an ideal scenario where the user machine plugs in, boots up, discovers that it's out of compliance, and then auto remediates. As you can see here, it's downloading the signature, and you'll see it go back to 3% and so forth like that. Kind of some UI bugs, but you can see clearly the client signature files are outdated. So it's updating, it's updating, it's updating. My mail client is trying to connect, is trying to connect, trying to connect. And again, I don't have that health certificate, so therefore it's not allowing me to connect. But it's auto-updating, and it's providing the user with information what's going on, because we don't want to generate that help desk call. We want to be able to provide the user with information to say, hey, you know, you're updating. This is good. Good. Windows Mail is failing to connect because it's quarantined. We're going to let this go, and eventually what will happen is it will update that signature, which is about 2021 May going across the wire. Now, would this be fun during a RAS scenario over dial-up? No, but you can actually configure policies to say, hey, he's out of compliance. We're going to update them, but at the same time, we're not going to restrict. So you can actually do reporting mode. So there we go. So it's still kind of updating, but it's telling me now that it's updated. The computer meets the requirements, even though it's still kind of updating. But essentially, I'm saying that that's a UI issue. And if I click on send, receive, let's see if we can connect. So essentially, what we can do is create what I was saying before. And let's see the UI. There we go. There's all my mail. So again, same scenario with auto remediation. So the RAS scenario, if we didn't want to push down, or we did want to push down that 20 meg file, but we didn't want to restrict the user, we could actually create a zone or a health zone to say, okay, RAS users, they're allowed to come in. If their signature is out of date, that's fine. Don't restrict, but remediate. So that's totally granular in how you want to configure it. NAP is incredibly granular. They can create those zones. You can create exemptions. I worked with military installations. I might have mentioned this before, but you know, they want to exclude three-star generals and above. Hey, they get a free pass. Doesn't matter if they're compromised, they're worm-infected, virus-infected. Those guys that are three stars and above on their machines can get a free pass every time. So I guess it's job security, if you will. So it's very granular what you can do. So that showed the self-remediation and auto-remediation. What I want to do now as part of the second part of the demo is actually do the drill down. So you've seen the working code here of the client. So while we're on the client, let's go ahead and take a look to see exactly how that's configured. Now, as I mentioned before, we support 802.1x out of the box today. Today, right now, Vista supports 802.1x enforcement out of the box. XP will support it. It doesn't support it natively today, but part of my job was to work with the product team to understand customer requirements that everybody would want that capability. That, you know, having 802.1x enforcement with NAP on XP is very important because not everybody will be at Vista at the same time. Obviously, there'll be scenarios where we're migrating, so you have a mix of XP and Vista. So that plan is actually on the table and is ready to be executed to build code for XP. So again, here's my client. I'm just showing the personal store. But what's interesting here are my NAP client configuration. Now, this can all be plumbed through GPOs, through group policies. And the first interesting here is the enforcement components, or enforcement clients. We have DHCP, remote access, IPsec, and I forgot to mention, we'll also have a gateway or a TS gateway solution where clients connecting to a TS gateway will have to be check for health. So we want that on there also. And then EAP, if we're doing any kind of extensible authentication protocol, like 802.1x using NSChat P2P, we can have that on there too. But as you see here, I have it enabled, IPsec, pretty simple, it's a simple box. If I wanted to use a local policy, I could. If I check this, this policy will always be overridden by the domain, so we don't want to check that, it doesn't matter. But if you had a guest access scenario, that might be something you'd want to do. And we are working on a guest access scenario. We do have a solution in the works for a provisioning service, if you're using IPsec as an example, where you have that hotel airport experience where the user that's a guest that has an unmanaged machine plugs into the network, redirected to a website, they fill out a form, and for example, you know, who they are, how long they need this access for, who's their sponsor, and then through business processes wrapped around the technology, they'll be able to get access and have a health certificate flown to them. So that was enforcement. User interface settings, I don't know if some of you saw in the interface settings can be configured to your company specifics. This, again, can be plumbed down through group policy. Title, description, if you want to have your little company logo, you can do that here too. Health registration settings, this is important. Again, today the way it works is that you will have an HRA plumbed down to the client, meaning what HRA does this client talk to get a health cert. Now, in a guest access, or I should say a roaming scenario, what's going to happen is that the GPO, if applied to the machine, will still apply to the machine, meaning that if I, based in Redmond, and I go to Sydney Microsoft Office, right now, if I just use straight domain GPOs, I'll go to the HRA that's in Redmond. However, what you can do today is use site-aware policies if you choose through Active Directory to say, when the client boots up, plumb the HRA in its site. You could do that. However, what we've heard through our MSIT folks and also through customers is that they'd rather have something more dynamic, an HRA locator service, kind of like DC locator service. When you boot up, you always go to the closest DC. Same holds true that we're going to have with HRA. When you boot up, you go to approximately the closest HRA, presumably not going across the Pacific, that you're going to go someplace that you're on the same continent. So in this case here, we have HRA, and essentially when we do when we send a statement of health to the HRA, it's essentially just an HTTP post. We're sending it to the policy server, which is running IIS, and essentially is going across. When the client sends its statement of health, it sends actually two things when doing IPsec enforcement. The client will send its statement of health along with PKCS10 file, certificate signing request. The HRA will take that, those two requests, forward the statement of health to the policy server. If the policy server deems it to be healthy, it returns a positive statement of health response to the HRA. The HRA will then send the PKCS10 file to the CA, the certificate authority, which is a Windows 2003 CA running in standalone mode that's issuing a health certificate with a health certificate OID or object ID, EKU, enhanced key usage. So that essentially is returned a PKCS7 file from the CA to the HRA. So, don't want to geek out too much here, but essentially what we're looking at here is how do I configure my client to send its statement of health to the HRA or network access device. Now, in my case here, I didn't use HTTPS, which bad, but normally most of you will, so you can just click here. So you always do over encryption using TLS. And you can have multiple HRAs here. So what will happen is it will try the first one. If you don't get a response, it will try the second, the third, and so on. Request policy in the settings here, we have the way that you form your PKCS10 file. You can determine what kind of hash you want to use here, whether it's SHA or whether you want to use your own specific message digest. They're all supported here, so that's very configurable on here. Same with the CSP or cryptographic service provider. If you're using Schlumberger, you could have it on here. If you're using the Microsoft-based CSP, you could have it on here. Key length and so forth. It's all in how you create that initial PKCS10. This is where the data is configured and how it's created and what attributes are added. So that was it for the client. Let's move over to the network access device. I'll go back to my policy server. Bring it up. So what I want to look at is first is DHCP. This is regular Microsoft DHCP. Right now, only Microsoft DHCP supports NAP. If you're using something like Lucent's QIP or a third party or even your own, we're exposing the API so you could write your own DHCP NAP solution. Now, you could actually, if you want to call your vendor, ask them what they're doing, are they part of the vendor program, I highly recommend it. DHCP I've seen in deploying customers is by far one of the easier deployments to go forth. It's basically, as you do, is what you do is you configure your scopes, as I'm looking at here. And what you want to do is that you do is you go through and you enable them for network access protection. And basically, I said any scope that I configure on here, I'm going to enable for NAT. And when I look at my address pool, it's pretty simple. I just have, you know, 9 addresses. What's interesting are the scope options. Okay? So the scope options here, we have one set class for router, one set for NAT. Now, what's interesting here is looking over at class. I can sort by class. You know, this is for my healthy clients. We'll get this. And so forth. And my unhealthy clients that are NAT, or that are NAT, I should say, in quarantine, will receive these options. And essentially, the restricted, as you saw in the demo, the restricted NATdemo.com. What we'll see in a few moments is how do the routes get plumbed to the client? We'll see that in the policy server. So what happens is that the DHCP server will return the routes to the client based on what's configured in your policy server. So this is how what DHCP looks like. I'm configuring for NAT. Based on when the clients come up, whether they're healthy or not, determines whether they get onto the network. Now, our other network access device we're going to look at is the Health Registration Authority. Again, very simple, very easy. Essentially, what the HRA is RA. Those of you familiar with public key infrastructure, PKI. Essentially, what I can do is list all my CAs that are deemed to be my health CAs are classified here. So I have my health CA listed here. I could have multiple CAs listed here if I wanted to. And if the HRA tries one and fails, it will black it out and go to the next one. If it fails in the next one, it will black it out and go to the next one and so forth. So essentially, you can have these configurations here. And as we did on the client, we can configure our crypto policies here. Whether the key algorithms we want to do, we support any hash, any crypto service providers, any. But if we wanted to get more details, we could actually go through and get very granular what we will accept. So if you come across and you say I'm only supporting the Microsoft strong CSP and none of these other ones, if a client comes through with one of these other ones, then it fails and rejects the request. Transport policy here. If I wanted to use HTTP client user agents, that's all configured here. In my case, I'm not using it. I can use any agent. But these are all here for you to use. So these are all the information for the network access device that we have here. Now, if you decide to go forth and set this up, or if you already set it up and you want to troubleshoot, Event Viewer is definitely your friend, because what you want to do is actually go through in the policy server and show, you know, is there any connectivity, number one, between the client and the network access device. And as you can see here, there's a lot of connectivity that we have here from the time that we booted up. And as an example, the Health Registration Authority approved the request. The network policy server that indicated the client should be given full access. This is one of the examples that we went through and showed. Granted access. This is the NAT demo 5600. This is the Vista client. Let's see if we can find one that where it failed. Right here. Here's a good one. This is when my Vista machine failed health check, right? So it failed based on the policies that I've configured, which is the next thing we're going to go see. So it's unhealthy, restricted access. As you can see here is the policy name that I've configured. And it can go through, and here's the MSIT, remember the URL that we went to when we were quarantined. This is where, again, it's being passed to the client. And it's telling me that the TrendSHA, or System Health Validator, deemed the client to be non-compliant. So we're using the antivirus for Trend. All my other ones on the Windows Health, Auto Updates, and Firewall were compliant. So that's good information. So good stuff here. You know, you can actually go through and take a look at it and see what's going on. Let's see. So that was the actual, we went through the policy, so we have not gone through the policy server. So we've shown the client, we've shown the network access device. Hopefully I'm not flipping too much through these screens where you're going to have a seizure. Let's take a look at the actual policy server itself. Now, from a deployment standpoint, I want to be very clear. You know, I just, for the sake of the demo, because I have limited resources on the laptop, physical host I'm running on, put the policy server and my network access devices all in one server. Now, generally, you probably want to separate if you can, but you don't have to. You could perhaps virtualize those devices, perhaps virtualize, you know, your policy server, virtualize the Health Registration Authority, virtualize DHCP. Again, it's part of your defense in depth. You don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. You don't want to have all your one server running all services, because if the server's taken out, all of those services are taken out. Let's hedge our bets and separate the roles. So those are things for more business decisions as you go through net planning. Branch office scenario is a great example. Think of the Active Directory deployments for those of you that have done branch office deployments. To DC or not to DC the branch is the question, right? Do we want a DC in the branch? Because if the WAN connectivity goes down, we want your users to continue working. Same holds true with NAT. Do we want a policy server in the branch? Do we want a network access device server in the branch? What if the WAN link goes down? Those are decisions that we need to make during the planning process. So you can keep them all in one server, or we could separate. It's all in how your business runs. So let's take a look at the policy server. So as I mentioned before, this is, again, NAP is our IaaS server on steroids. We're looking at our network access protection. You've seen the system health validators. Now, if I had SMS plugged in, you would see a system health validator here. If I had Tivoli plugged in, same holds true. Alteris, same thing. Now that I have a health validator, I want to create something called templates and who they apply to. So if I look at my XP client here, we're going to take, once we have system health validator templates, we create our network access policy. So policies contain templates. So let's look at our template first here. XP healthy, what's considered healthy? Well, in our case here, client passes all SHV checks. We have multiple things we can look here. But in our case, we pass everything. What do we pass? We pass the health validator check. So all those need to be on and healthy. Unhealthy, client fails one or more health checks. Which health checks? Again, Windows Security Health Validator. These, again, for my XP clients. If I want to look at Vista, I'm looking at both now Trend and the Windows Security Health Validator. Same holds true. So essentially same thing. I'm just checking one more box on the SHV, and that's under Trend. Okay? Let that go. And remediation groups. Here's where we create our remediation groups. These remediation groups will be inserted into our network access protection policies. What I mentioned before, where we're allowed to talk to, this is where you define it. These are the servers that you essentially place in your quarantine network. And when the policy server says, no, you're not allowed to get onto the network, in the statement of health response, it contains these servers that you're allowed to go to. So essentially allowing access to the Trend server, allowing access to the SMS server, and so forth, or any other server you deem that needs to be in the boundary zone for these clients to get healthy. So again, you'll insert these servers into the policies that we're going to create. So we have templates, which are essentially the vendors that plug in. We have validator templates, which essentially get client-specific. And then we have remediation server groups, all of which are going to be part of our network policies, and here they are. So these are very simple policies, and at the end of this demonstration, you actually have web links that you can actually download the IPsec and the DHCP guides that will actually give you a step-by-step documentation on setting this up yourself. So if I want to look at XP, and the way this works at evaluation time, that the policy server will go through the first one, as you notice here, processing order, the second and third until it finds a match. If it doesn't find a match, then it essentially deems it to be unhealthy and quarantined. And you'll see that logged into the event log. UI here, horrible. First things off. We're looking at reevaluating and actually redoing the UI, whether or not it makes it to the release, yet to be seen. But the NAT team, who I've worked closely with, who's been great in following up in usability studies, knows that this UI is not exactly user-friendly. Essentially, you need to be a Radius guru to really understand this, and even then it's challenging. But bear with me here. Just ignore policy type and grant access altogether for now. Policy is enabled. This is healthy, full access. Available source, I'm going to leave as unspecified because I have multiple sources, meaning network access devices. But if I wanted this to be specific to a network access device, I could clarify it here. But in my case, it's any network access device. What conditions do I want to evaluate here? Well, the conditions that I'm looking at right now under SHV template are computer, XP healthy. So where did I choose that? Remember how I defined them before in the existing templates? Here they are, and I can plug them in here. One other component here I have is that I associate this to a Windows groups, is that I only want this to apply to the Windows machines that I put in the Vista group, XP, or I should say XP group. So this policy, when it's evaluated, that this machine, any machine that's XP, needs to be in the group and needs to be healthy to be evaluated and deemed to be healthy. Settings, now this is for a healthy policy, right? NAP enforcement, I'm not enforcing since the machine is deemed to be healthy. Remediation servers will all be grayed out. So So it's pretty simple. This is my healthy policy. If you pass the health check, you get on. Pretty simple. Vista Health, same thing. Now, the unhealthy is a little different here. And the interesting components that you look at would be the SHV templates. This one, as you notice, is unhealthy. And again, the Windows group that I want to apply, XP machines. And the settings that you want to look at is enforcement, NAP enforcement. This time I do want to enforce it. Remember I mentioned before we can defer enforcement if we wanted to allow people to give them some grace time? Chances are most of you out there don't, hopefully most of you, when Microsoft releases a patch every patch Tuesday once a month, you don't say, okay, this patch needs to be on absolutely right now unless there's some kind of zero-day exploit out there. But chances are go through your threat analysis and say, okay, we're going to give them a week and we want them to have the patch deployed. Here's where you can actually define this policy to say, okay, give them a couple days. We don't want everyone coming on the network at 8 o'clock in the Monday morning and actually have, to have the patch on. We want to give them a grace period. So if I wanted to defer enforcement, I could, but I don't. Update non-computer compliant computers automatically is checked here. And that's actually a good point, which one thing I was remiss in showing is the ongoing compliance. I'm going to flip back quickly to the Vista client to show that once I'm healthy, what happens when I try and get out of the state of health? And an interesting footnote here is that one of the guys on the NAP team was trying to do some testing, and unbeknownst to him, he had actually had the NAP agent turned on with firewall mandating as being on. So what happened was is that, let's just show what happens here. So when he went here to do some testing, he wanted to disable his firewall because he wanted to do a little bit of testing. So he brings up the firewall. And he comes over, and it comes up, and he's waiting, okay, great. And we're going to change our settings. So he goes here, and he tries to do this, and he says, okay, I'm just going to shut it off as I always do, and I'm going to click OK. And what you'll see here, let's spin, and off, and let's see what happens. Should go through a health check. Come on, baby. There we go, on. So he continued to do this for the next 10 minutes trying to figure out what is going on, and immediately you hear this loud scream coming from his office and comes out, what's going on? And then all the PMs are looking at him and like, hey, you've been napped. So essentially what we're demonstrating here is ongoing compliance. I can shut off auto-remediating. I can shut off firewall if I wanted to and it turns it back on. You know, even though I have admin access, I can, you know, have access to this. If I shut off auto-updating, same would hold true. So it's really powerful to show the ongoing compliance. Once you get compliant, you want to stay compliant, and that's really the power of NAP that shows you today. So that kind of makes my point about the computer updates. Update non-computers automatically. If I unchecked that when I disabled the firewall, essentially I would have gone into quarantine and the firewall would have remained off. So that's the healthy unrestricted access. That's the Vista, same thing, kind of redundant. We won't go through this too much, but the remediation servers, if I wanted to specify the group, I could add that and click OK. So when I want the clients to go to the actual server, this is where I define it, in the policy itself. So NAP1, when the client is quarantined, will be allowed to talk to those servers I define in this group. That troubleshooting URL, remember I went to a site to give that user guidance on how to get healthy. Here is where that's defined. All right, so that concludes pretty much the demo. Let's go back to the slides and wrap up here, because I really want to get to the Cisco slides too. All right, here we go. All right, everyone should see the demo setup right now. So, kind of a summary here. You know, NAP is really nothing without enforcement. The thing here is start planning your enforcement strategy today. If it's 802.1x, check to see, number one, do our switches support 802.1x? Check to see if I use voice over IP. Are all the voice over IP phones VLAN from the same port that my computers are plugged into? I've had work with a customer where the voice over IP and their computers were plugged into the same port, and the voice over IP did not support 802.1x at the time. So check that out because it'll make your planning a lot easier as you go through. Printers. You know, do your printers, you know, have you been, you know the printers that are out there. Can you map the MAC addresses to give exemptions to the printers so they can actually bypass 802.1x? These are things to think about. IPsec. Something called server and domain isolation can be deployed today in preparation for NAP. If you go to microsoft.com/IPsec, you'll find our solution guide up there. We actually have a solution offering for our customers today that can be done in a 3-week engagement where we can come in, work with you, help you develop your policies, and then get them working in the lab. It doesn't cover deployment of the policies, but we can work with you on that too. This is based on the comments that we heard from the people that have actually read the 300-page deployment guide or IPsec server and domain isolation guide. Said this is just a lot of material. I don't have time to read it. Give me some kind of solution accelerator, which we can actually come in and help you do it. So that's available today. Some other things to do, you know, we kind of mentioned this in the beginning, health modeling, you know, what do I consider healthy, exemption analysis, who gets a pass, policy zoning, we talked about RAS, you know, all these things are really important to plan for. The last one I'd like to look at is that the Internet Authentication Service and deploying that today, get RADIUS out in your environment, make it as pervasive in your network as possible. Most customers that I work with today have RADIUS for two things, or one, mostly for VPN, or two, for wireless. That's great. And that's really what we're trying to encourage our customers today is start deploying wireless. Microsoft has a great solution for secure wireless where we work with our vendors, you know, with Aruba, with Enterasys, BlueSocket, Nortel. Those customers we work with today to give you that single sign-on experience for the client. The supplicant is built into the client. The user has the same experience, the wireless, same as wired. It shouldn't be any different. They should get group policy plumbed to the client, whether they're in a wired scenario, whether they're in the wireless scenario. But essentially, if you deploy wireless, secure wireless today, you can get the authentication servers out there, the IAAS servers, because when we're ready to release Longhorn, essentially what we just need to do is go through and upgrade those servers to Longhorn. Sorry to be a little bit salesy here. The sales guys told me to throw this in, but it actually makes sense when planning for NAP that you can get wireless out today. It really goes a long way in prepping for NAP tomorrow because RADIUS will already be pervasive throughout the network. So let's continue here on the next slide. The Cisco update. So last but not least, we have the Cisco update. Now, back in 2004, Microsoft and Cisco came out with a press release, as I mentioned in the beginning, that we're going to interoperate. What does that mean? We didn't know at the time, but from that day on, we worked very closely together. I was part of that at towards the end of working with Cisco, had the pleasure of working with Cisco on site for a week along with the NAP team. I can tell you it's been a great effort, a humongous effort for these two companies to work together and you know, show that we can put out a product that interoperates. It's been incredibly good fortune, and it's good for our customers because I think the customers win on this strategy. And essentially what this means, again, is that, you know, if you want to deploy NAP, you can. If you want to deploy NEC, you can. If you want to deploy them together, you can, without rip and replacing. The two will integrate. Doing cross-licensing of our APIs, we're basically license the APIs to each other so we can build upon our infrastructure. It's just very compelling, very strong collaboration. So let's take a look exactly what the components look like. Now, again, this scenario here is a NAC-NAP scenario. So I've deployed NAC, I've deployed NAP. What does that look like? In this case here, the client computer that will be supported in this scenario that we're looking at where you're running the NAP agent, essentially replacing the Cisco Trust Agent, or CTA, on Vista, you're running it as part of as your NAP agent. So in this scenario here, the client comes up, and we're using a new protocol that is supported by Cisco, EAPFast or EAP over UDP, 802.1x is what we're talking about, which is natively supported by Cisco ACS. So what that gives you is the extensibility now that you can use the EAPFast or EAP over UDP in a NAC scenario. So when the client boots up, it essentially passes its health credentials to the switch, which is then forwarded via RADIUS from the switch to Cisco ACS. Now, a new protocol was developed, the Host Credential Authorization Protocol, or HCAP, which is a simple HTTP post from the Cisco ACS to the Microsoft NPS for evaluation. So Cisco is essentially saying, okay, we're going to hold the network profiles and enforcement, and Microsoft NPS will hold the policy, what is considered healthy. So the NPS will evaluate and return the response to the ACS, and if the client is unhealthy, ACS will talk to the switch and quarantine the client. So all the network profiles will be stored in ACS's deemed the quarantine network. So the ACS continues to be the enforcer, the Microsoft MPS continues to be the policy holder, and the two just work together. So it really adds value. And you have your partner servers continue to feed what is considered healthy to the Microsoft policy server. So that's what we consider an inbound scenario. Now, this, again, is a Vista client. This will not be supported in XP right now as plans stand, but this is a Vista scenario only. Now, if we look at our next scenario, control right, that was inbound, and we want to look at our out-of-band scenario. So essentially what we did is we authorized using EAPFest or EAP over UDP for the machine, or the user in that case. There'll be some cases where that we'll want to use a health credential or a health certificate. In this case here, it's a little bit different. The client boots up, is not able to validate its health using the established protocols that we were talking about before. So essentially then goes through the health certificate enrollment protocol, or HSEP, and talks to a health registration authority. Now, we're not talking IPsec here. We're simply talking about provisioning a health credential. And it provisions a health credential, meaning a health certificate, to the client. Now, the client is using that health credential to validate its health posture. So once it receives the health credential, provided that it's healthy, it will then send it to the Cisco or to the switcher routers, and then to the Cisco ACS for evaluation. Now, to be clear, when we talk about a pure NAF environment, now if you want to just use Microsoft NAF in an 802.1x environment, we do support Cisco switches, we do support Juniper and Terraces and so forth. What we're talking about in this scenario is a NAP and NAC scenario. So I want to be very clear on that. This is supporting NAP and NAC interoperability. All right, so the next slide here. So what are the benefits? Really, you know, we talk about customer choice. We don't want our customers who are budgeting for a network access control project for FY07 to say, where do I put my money? Do I put it in Cisco? Do I put it in Microsoft? I don't want to go with one and back myself into a corner. Not the case at all. If you want to go with Cisco today, you can. If you want to go with Microsoft NAP when it's released next year, absolutely. We'll add value on top of your existing implementation. So we talk about investment protection. We talk about the single agent included. You know, we're going to be actually getting rid of CTA and integrating that into the Vista under the EAP components. And those EAP components will actually be downloaded or distributed through Windows Update. So you can actually get those components and download to Vista from our Windows Update. And again, we talked about cross-platform support. Each company is licensing its APIs to each other. Again, a big win to the customers. This is kind of a quick summary. You know, we've kind of touched upon this. You know, there will be betas going on here. Contact your Cisco rep if you want to get into this beta. Microsoft is running a very closed, limited beta right now. We do have one or two customers in line to deploy this. So, again, it really extends the platform here, bringing in our partners together. You know, Cisco has the same partner ecosystem that we are, so it's a win-win situation. NAP summary, you know, let's start the planning process today. If you haven't heard my webcast in the beginning about planning for NAP, I highly recommend you go back and listen to that one. It goes through some details of what you can do today to start planning for NAP tomorrow. Deploying secure wireless, remember we said get Windows 2003 Radius out there. When we release Longhorn for your policy server, you simply upgrade those 2003 servers to a Longhorn server. Health agents, we talked about the ecosystem, we talked about the enforcement mechanisms, and so forth. So, these are kind of the NAP tidbits, takeaways here that we were talking about this afternoon or this morning or tonight. Maybe that's my webcast there. Right there looking at the Vista Network Access Protection codename. Yeah, I think that is. So that is the other one I did, part one, if you will. The setup guides are all available online below. If you want to take and download the bits and start setting them up, they are available. And let's see, I think we have some questions in the question queue. Let me take a look at here. Let's see, what are examples of system health servers, SMS or Longhorn servers? So some of the examples of system health servers would be SMS site server. SMS v4 will be supported. Another example would be Tivoli, Altaris. Those are other servers. Or it may be your own homegrown patch server. So those are examples of system health servers. What about clients that are not in the domain of external people but that need access to some services inside the protected zone? A great question. Guest access scenario is probably the number one request that's on the NAP team's feature request today, and what we're doing is working on a provisioning service to be able to provide customers the ability to give guest access as a hotel or airport experience where the user or client plugs into your network, they're redirected to a website, they're entering information on who they are, who they're here to see, how long they need access, and then with business processes around that, they're provisioned access through health credentials or some other process that we've developed. But that will be in the works, and I hope, I believe it's still on track for RTM to give our customers a guest access solution. One other thought on that, too, is that sometimes that we look at that, customers that I've worked with that can do today, you can actually look at deploying like a TS gateway solution today that I've worked with customers where we've seen that perhaps IPsec enforcement wasn't something that would work, where we actually went through and said we have 20,000 clients that are consultants on our network and they need to use their machines to be on our network. We don't provision them those machines. So you might want to look at using a terminal server type of access, which you basically block access to everything on their network and on your network, and they're only allowed to terminal server into a box that gives them access to all of CorpNet. Good question. Thank you. What if an install requires you to disable the firewall? Great question. So you get in that scenario, you're pulling out your hair, you're yelling because you can't actually disable the firewall because policy is actually controlling that. That's actually where you get into, hopefully your NAP team is working with your software update teams where you're going through and understanding what does this firewall install do? How does it work? Or what does this software application require? You know, it may come to the point where you create exemptions for these applications that they're allowed to install. But those are things you need to work with your vendor to say, you know, the first question I would say, well, why are you asking me to disable the firewall? Perhaps maybe I could get away with allowing some exemptions that this application needs in order to function correctly. So these are things I would highly encourage you to work with your application vendor to understand, number one, why does a firewall need to be disabled? And then understand, can we allow exemptions so that the application can be installed correctly? So I would work with your vendor. Or just disable the firewall auto-remediation altogether. Can you confirm, will XP work with a NAP NAC solution or is it just Vista? The answer to that is just Vista. So the NAP NAC scenario where we're integrating CTA into the Vista EAP components, supporting EAPFast and EAP over UDP, that will be a Vista-only scenario. Let's see, I think that's all the questions I have in the question manager. Janet, do we have any other questions online?
I don't see any additional questions coming in. I'll just want to remind everybody, though, that if they have any questions, go ahead and submit them, and we can get to them in just a moment here. Also want to remind you that we do record all of our webcasts. So as Gene had mentioned, his previous webcast is posted, and any upcoming webcasts are all posted right there at Microsoft.com/webcast. We also, if you have content ideas or anything you want to see us do differently on these webcasts, we'd love hearing your feedback. And I'd like to remind everybody that today's webcast was presented using the Microsoft Office Live Meeting technology. So there's a free 14-day trial. You can go to Microsoft.com/presentlive. And I'm going to post up a survey here. I'll let you know that if you just hit that registered online area, that'll take you right to the survey. Not seeing any additional questions coming in. Do you have any additional questions coming at all for you?
I don't. Let me check one more time.
So I'll just remind everybody as well that if you want to print a PDF of the slides, you can go into the File menu. It's in your upper navigation bar. I know there was a couple slides there that had some great content information on them as well. So.
Great. Yeah, I don't see any questions coming in.
Okay. Well, if there's no further questions, we can remain online for just the next few minutes. And if you have any additional questions, just submit them via the Q&A text window, and we will answer them that route. And so with that, I'm just going to extend a special thanks to Gene for today's presentation. I want to remind everybody your feedback's valuable, so take a moment to fill out that survey before you log out. And that concludes this TechNet Live meeting. So thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Great. Thanks, everyone.
Hello. Thank you for listening to this webcast. We value your feedback, so please take a couple minutes and go to www.webcastaudio.com/survey to complete a quick evaluation. Thank you.